All rise. Court is in session. Call now, 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
And a very good morning to you. Happy Sunday. I'm Tiffany Bacon. I am your co-host here at Court Radio, and we have our usual cast of characters in the building. We have Mr. Dean Weitzman, my co-host, the main host here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tiffany.
How
good
are
morning.
You?
I'm doing well, thank you. Dean Weitzman here, bringing you Court Radio another Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Where we attempt to educate and titillate.
Whoa.
Can we use that word Sunday morning?
It's out there, so it's done.
Right. We're here to educate with the hottest legal topics of the day.
If you are tuning in, as you usually do to us here on Court Radio, we always welcome your legal questions. Now would be the time to give us a call. 215-263-1079. We are here to assist you, so you can give us a call at this time with any legal question. Now, let's find out what the hot legal topic is.
Our hot button topic of the day is copyright law, entertainment law, and how an artist protects his or her property, which would be their artistic creation. And for that topic, we've brought in an expert on copyright law and the nuances of the copyright of the actual performance or recording and the copyright of the publishing aspect of the art. And that expert, drum roll please, is Christopher Cabot.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. How are we?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm blessed. Good to be with you, Tiffany.
Good to be with you, Dean.
Thank you, Chris. Chris is with the law offices of Lloyd Zane Remick and Zane Management. And they represent many, many artists in the Philadelphia area and the world. Is that right, Chris?
That's correct. No, that is correct. We're based here, but we have got folks throughout the country and overseas as well.
And you've been with Lloyd for about 6 years now.
I've been with Lloyd for about 6 years now.
Graduate of Delaware Widener Law School, local homegrown guy.
That's correct. Yeah, I actually grew up in Coatesville, PA.
Nice. Yeah. Coatesville, they're having some problems there lately with
fires.
The fires.
You don't live there still, do you?
My family does. I've moved out because I work in Center City. But by the grace of God, the folks who were lighting the fires were caught. And we're very thankful that they were not Coatesville residents. I think anytime you're... your own people turn on you, it really changes the whole morale of the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be very strange.
Indeed. Indeed.
You know, I checked your bio because I want to make sure I know who is sitting next to me in the studio before I invite them in. And we have something in common. We are both Eagle Scouts.
Okay. I'll shake on that.
Eagle Scout was coming.
That's terrific.
You know, we're guys who, when we set our mind at something, nothing and nobody is stopping us. Right, Chris?
That's correct. The grouse hunt or what is the thing?
The grouse hunt. No,
what's that hunt that they do? The camping trip where you're
a jamboree?
No. To become an Eagle Scout, you have a...
These are the misconceptions of the non-Eagle Scout.
I think he's talking about the Order of the Arrow. I think that's what it is. That's actually different.
There's some type of hunt that they do for some type of animal that really doesn't exist.
We're going to get off on a tangent.
Snipe hunt.
I don't know what a snipe hunt is, but we're getting off on a tangent here.
I like it, though. I haven't talked about a snipe hunt in a long time.
All right. So anyway, let's get on to our topic. Chris, I'm an artist. Not really,
but... I have a question for Chris first, because we didn't touch upon this in the beginning. Do you limit yourself to certain types of artists, or is it really open slate?
We're all genres. We currently have a gospel project, actually a gospel record label that's been put out through the management company.
So Bunzi Records Productions. Sure. Writers...
Sure, we'll get into all of it.
What about, like, I guess, all the arts?
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually the only... full freestanding entertainment media sports firm that's based in Philadelphia. We're very nimble.
And sports, we didn't mention sports.
We specialize in music, film, TV, television, literary, theater.
Cool. Very cool.
Production, and then sports and the sports agency as well.
Do you have an artistic bone in your body?
I think everyone does to a degree if they follow this line through a passion. But it expired many years ago.
There
it
you go.
Many years
okay.
ago. You played the clarinet
Don't
when
say
you were
that.
Six. And that
sixth
kind
grade
of thing.
Saxophone.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Well, but you know what? I can see the passion in your eyes when it comes to representing artists. Mm-hmm. So tell us what it is that you do and how an artist who creates, let's say, a song can benefit from your services and can be protected by them.
Sure. No, I'd be happy to speak about that. There are two copyrights in music, and that's usually where people start to make mistakes. So let's talk about them quickly. Let's pretend for a second that Dean writes a song, and Dean writes a song called Sunday Mornings with Tiffany. And he writes all the lyrics, he writes the melodies, he writes all the music, he writes everything. But then he says, you know what, I really can't sing that well, but I know that Tiffany can. Mm. So he comes to Tiffany, he says, Tiffany.
Amen.
Yeah.
No.
And he says, Tiffany, I want you to record this. So Tiffany goes into the studio. She records it on whatever she records it on. And now we have two copyrights from the creation. A copyright, I'm going to give the legal definition, then I'm going to speak in English after that. A copyright is an original expression of an idea that's reduced to a tangible form. So what does that mean in plain English? It means that when Dean actually writes his song, puts that on the paper, he has a copyright in that. When Tiffany goes into the studio, records that song, she has a copyright that in the recording. The way that Dean protects and enforces that copyright is he goes to copyright.gov, www.copyright.gov, and he fills out what's called a performing arts application. Mm. When we used to do PA forms, we used to call them the PA form. Mm-hmm. The way that Tiffany protects her copyright is she goes to www.copyright.gov, and she fills out what's called a song recording application.
Mm.
Here's why it's important to do that. Here's why it's important to enforce the right. One, you own your copyright for your life plus 70 years. You don't find too many assets in business that last that long.
What, your life plus 70 years.
So 70. You live to be 100, and then 70 years after you die.
Right.
Amen. Amen.
There you go.
170 is the probably the limit of a copyright.
But my question would be, who owns the right to the actual song itself, though? Because you just mentioned something. Tiffany expressed the song in a
great
certain
question.
Way, and that's the recording.
Great question.
But the song itself, can anyone just use that?
Well, Dean owns it.
Okay.
Dean owns it.
So I would have to pay him if I wanted to record it?
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
And we call that the publishing rights.
That's part of it.
Let me
explain how it breaks down.
Okay.
Before you explain, Chris,
ahead,
for those who are tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. It is brought to you by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. We have Annette on the phone, and I want her to hold on 1 second so that you can finish what you were going to say. I just wanted to acknowledge that we know that you're on the phone, and we're going to get to your question in just one moment. Also, if you would like to call in with a question, you can. 215-263-1079.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Just to finish the thought real quick, the reason that you actually register the copyright and make sure you're able to enforce it is you can't actually sue for copyright infringement or anything like that and seek some of what they call the statutory damages, some of the actual rewards and monetary damages that you can receive per the Copyright Act unless you register it. But to answer the question here quickly, because I know we have a call on the line, Dean's song, you're correct, cannot be recorded without his permission. As a songwriter, though, he wants that. He wants people to record it. He wants people to take that song, that underlying song, and actually put it into video games and television and sync it up to audio visuals and things like that. And we can talk more about those licenses and clearance, and more importantly for our listeners, where the income streams fall from those uses.
All right, one quick question, though. Because this is the way it works. When those rights are violated, does your firm litigate the violation on behalf of clients, or is that a matter that you refer out to a litigation firm?
In most cases, if it's a relatively direct, straightforward matter, we'll take care of that. Where there are times if, for example, let's say it's a multi-tiered, multi-layered litigation where you've got a copyright infringer overseas, and there are four or five different folks, we may bring on co-counsel or something like that to get involved as well.
Okay. All right. All right, let's hear from Annette.
And we have Annette calling in from New Jersey with a question. Good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I have a simple question about identity theft. okay? Mm-hmm. Someone stole my daughter's identity. They used it, forged checks and everything else. And they had a bench worn out for her. How could she go about correcting this and seeing about a lawyer before she goes to the state that they got the warrant out? And the warrant was 2 years ago.
Okay, are you saying that there's a warrant out for your daughter's arrest?
Yes.
Okay, then you're saying that whatever act precipitated that warrant was not something she did, but somebody who was an imposter.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that she's got to address it head on. She should, number one, she needs to contact the person who has that warrant so that she can let them know that it was not her, but she's going to need to surrender herself to deal with the issue so that it can be cleared up. Any proof that she has that it was not her, she should gather together so that she has that. And that process really needs to be done, I believe, with the assistance of counsel so that he or she can walk your daughter through that process. What state is the warrant emanating from?
Delaware.
Okay. So she needs to get counsel from Delaware who can interact between the district attorney's offices or the county prosecutor's office and your daughter. And I don't think that she should do that on her own. But if there is proof that she has that it wasn't her, she needs to provide that to her counsel. And then this matter can get cleared up relatively simply. But it needs to be addressed head on. All right, ma'am?
Okay. Do you recommend someone in Delaware you know?
Well, I'll tell you what. You can listen to the show for the remainder of the day, and you're going to hear our telephone number repeated on numerous occasions by the wonderful Tiffany Bacon. And when you hear that, write it down and call us tomorrow, and we'll be happy to make that referral on your behalf.
Thank you, and God bless you, and you have a blessed day.
And the same to you.
All right, okay. Thank you. Don't forget, if you'd like to ask a question or talk about our hot-button topic this morning, you can, 215-263-1079.
Yes, all you budding, starving artists, mm-hmm. It's time for some free legal advice on copyright protection from one Christopher Cabot, a hardworking and dedicated employee of the law offices of Lloyd Zane Remick, one of the most famous entertainment law firms in the United States, not even Philadelphia. He's that firm is known the world round as being a preeminent firm that represents artists and their creations.
Hey, Chris, I have in line with what you were saying before. So I've always wondered this, and I'm actually an attorney who studied this a little bit, but back in law school, so I don't remember anything. This always, not bothered me, but I always had a question about this. All the little bars, nightclubs, all over the country who just play songs, do they have to pay into some type of thing? In other words, how does the artist get paid for that? Their songs are being played a million times everywhere at establishments. And I'm talking about paying establishments, obviously not your house or something like that. But is there a function that allows the artist to get paid from that type of venue?
There's a stark line that is misconceived by so many in the entertainment industry and outside. Here's the crazy thing. Earlier on in the show, Dean was talking about some different legislation and things like that.
Right.
In the United States, when there's a public performance of a song, radio is an example. Play on television, play in nightclubs, bars, restaurants, etc. It's the songwriters that get paid. The artists do not. The owners of the copyright and the recording do not. The record label does not. One of our clients, a guy named Robert Allen, he co-wrote the song Disturbia by Rihanna. Mm-hmm. Every time you hear Disturbia on the radio, Def Jam's not getting paid. Rihanna's not getting paid. Every time you hear it in a nightclub, they're not.
Huh.
When the volume of the play.
Who's getting paid on that? The guy who wrote it?
Songwriters. The songwriters.
Isn't there a song about being the songwriter or something from the 70s?
See, but I guess my
I don't remember.
More of my question is, how do they get paid?
Exactly.
The guy isn't writing a check. Every little nightclub is saying, I'm writing a check to the
Of course not.
So there must be a
Exactly. There are three performance royalty organizations in the United States.
Okay.
Called ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. They collect public performance royalties that play on radio, television, bars, nightclubs, etc.
Right.
What happens is a guy like Rob, he happens to be a BMI writer, so he would register with BMI. He would put the songs that he has there, and you also do what's called your split. I gave an example earlier about Dean writing a song.
Yeah.
But if the two of us collaborated, we might say, okay, great, here's our copyright application. Dean wrote the song. Chris co-wrote the song. How do we own the income that comes out of it? We would agree on a split. Maybe it's 50-50. Maybe Dean wrote more, so we go 70-30, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But all the co-writers register that song. In this case, it's BMI that collects it. And then there's also what's called a publishing affiliate. And what Rob would go ahead and do is then register another name, almost like a fictitious name, because the law says there's all that money. If there's $100 that comes in from all that play, what it is radio, bars, nightclubs, they pay into what's called a blanket license, where they pay ASCAP or BMI. If there's $100, $50 goes to the writer's share.
Who oversees?
$50 goes to the publisher's share.
How do you know when it's played? In other words, there's got to be some entity.
Sure. No, indeed.
Because now we're having problems. Obviously, the internet has created a huge problem.
Right? I've heard that. People have told me that.
Yeah, I'm sure your artists.
Very much.
Yeah.
We like the days of $19 CDs.
Right,
exactly. We love those days.
Because now it's impossible to enforce who is listening.
Difficult, very difficult. Yeah. I think I saw a study that came out the other day. They say 95% of downloads are illegal.
Wow.
So that only means we can go up.
Right. Mm. But it's a shame because these artists are, you know, putting their product out there. And we're not talking about a lot of money per use. It could be dollars, but people
could be
are
pennies.
Not even paying that.
No, they're not. Right? No, they're not. Unfortunately.
Yeah. All right. It's
unfortunately
a shame.
Not.
All right, folks.
Well, we have
listen,
some people calling it.
I just got a text message from an older woman who told me that it was Barry Manilow. I write the songs that the whole world sings.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
Okay.
There
thank you
is.
To that older woman.
Yes. No. Know Barry Manilow very well. All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio and Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. We do welcome your phone calls at this time, 215-263-1079. Thomas is calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning, Thomas, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good
How
morning, Thomas.
Good morning. I was calling I had a friend. He passed. I have copies of the songs that he wrote was by gospel. It was all gospel tunes.
Mm-hmm.
To me, he is dynamite, and the songs need to come out. What can I do about that?
Why don't we talk on Monday? I can give you the office line if you'd like. If you'd like to take it, if you would go to zanemanagement.com. You'll see the number right there. I'd be happy to speak with you sometime tomorrow.
Oh, you can give the number.
Give the
Come
number on.
On
the air.
Go ahead, Chris.
I'd be happy
give
to
it.
Do that. The direct office line is 215-575-3820. Again, that's 215-575-3820.
Okay, thank you.
You stay blessed.
All right, good luck to you with that. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. Now, maybe you're sitting back and you're wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice. Just contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer, and they have over 100 years of combined experience, and they really will aggressively fight for you. So call for a free personal consultation, and remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. If you need answers to your questions, give them a call. 215-227-2727. That's 215-227-2727. You can visit them online at myphillylawyer.com. But if you need immediate answers, you can call us in studio right now, 215-263-1079. We have Dave calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning, Dave, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good, good. What's your question?
All right. I was in a band a couple years ago, and we wrote and produced numerous songs together. Mm-hmm. There were five of us in the band. And, you know, I've since left the band, and recently they have signed with a record company. And, you know, my name is on the copyright for writing the music and the lyrics to the songs. and they're currently performing the songs that I wrote, and they actually had an album come out. And I was wondering, what are my options as far as, you know, pursuing collecting on any royalties from that music?
Okay, that's a great question, Dave. Did you ever do, when we talked earlier in the show, when we talked about splits and things like that, did the guys in the group ever get together and say, okay, great, we wrote a song, there are three of us or four of us or five of us, and I wrote the lyrics, I wrote this, you wrote that, and divide up percentages on the splits? Did you ever do that?
We did.
Okay, terrific. So you know that. And are CDs or downloads being sold right now?
CDs.
Okay, terrific. That's terrific. So there's an income stream there. And is there any radio play behind it?
There is.
Good for you. Okay, that's good for you. Are you registered with ASCAP or BMI or CSAC?
BMI.
As a writer and as a publishing affiliate?
Right.
As both?
Yeah.
And is the publishing affiliate in your name or the name of the group?
It's in the name of the group.
Okay. What we would probably want to do then is definitely alert and let BMI know that you're no longer a part of the group and that your percentage should be paid directly to you. And we can usually do that through what's called a letter of direction. But I'd be glad to help you with that. And I'm not sure if you've been listening, but if you could give me a call at 215-575-3820, I'd be happy to speak with you about that tomorrow.
Okay. Now, what about as far as, like, performances and things of that nature?
Sure.
Like, they, I'm sure they, you know, they're collecting a lot of under-the-table money and, you know, because they're actually living in California right now, in Los Angeles.
Here's the rule, Dave, at Court Radio, that unwittingly you have violated.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm interested in that question, though. Because
I'm sure you are, but there's a double-dipping rule that we don't violate here. One question per participant. But you do have Chris's number, and he's sitting here.
Dave, I'll get that answered for you.
Okay.
When you hang up, you listen. I'm going to get an answer.
All right. Thanks, Dave, and have a blessed Sunday.
Talk to you tomorrow,
Dave. You too. Thanks for your help.
All right.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye. Also, we have George calling in from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Good morning, George, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to me.
No problem having me. That's okay. What's your question?
Okay. I'm calling... Well, years ago, I was married, and I've had three children. My wife passed away, and I used my children's Social Security numbers to get electric, gas, cable, you know, bills and stuff like that. Now that's given them a negative or a bad credit rating, or they can't get these utilities turned on in their name because of something that I did years ago. What would I have to do to get that straightened out, or how could I get it straightened out?
Well, probably the only way that comes to my mind, it's not necessarily a legal answer, but you're going to need your children, and you will probably need to send a letter to the credit reporting agencies explaining that it was not them, but you who were using their Social Security. But I'm not so sure if that's something you want to do without talking to an attorney as to what the implications are for having done that. But that being said, their poor credit is as a result of marks against them at the credit reporting agencies that maintain their credit records. And so whenever somebody has poor credit because of an act done by somebody else, my advice always to them is to write a letter to the credit reporting agency saying, this wasn't my credit. Somebody used my Social Security number to obtain credit falsely under my name. And so they could send those letters and they'll reside on their credit file, and it won't ameliorate, it won't do away with their bad credit entirely, but it will be an explanation and it will be the beginning of a restoration of their credit. So that's how we would handle that. From their perspective, they would need to send that to the three credit reporting agencies, and I think you can find those credit reporting agencies if you go to freecreditreport.com. It'll list those credit reporting agencies and how to get in touch with them, and then you can send a letter to those and let them know that the particular items were not yours. George, have a wonderful and blessed Sunday.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling. Now, I do have a question for our guest lawyer. Yes, I have a question actually about if you say you wrote something and you were a guest on someone's album. It was a compilation album, but you didn't know anything about the business, which I've heard a lot about, and you just recorded it, and then you kept it moving, and then it sold X number of units. Can you then go back and kind of say, okay, well, I want to claim my song because it's my song on there, it's my voice, it's my everything? What can you do after everything has been done?
There are more of those cases and matters than you would think of. Mm-hmm. What happens is, we talked about earlier, we said this morning, there's a song out there called Sunday Morning with Tiffany. Dean wrote it. Tiffany recorded it. Mm-hmm. If, for example, that later on Dean wrote another song for Tiffany and Tiffany recorded it, and you had me as a guest vocalist on there, what you would want to do is you would want to own my actual voice and mm-hmm. pay me for my studio time or something like that. And believe it or not, just giving someone cash alone isn't enough. The Copyright Act, which is, people don't read it on the beach. I mean, it's long, it's thick, it's like the IRS tax code. But it says that any time someone else does what's called a work for hire, where they're actually giving you the right to that, it has to be in writing. There has to be some sort of consideration. Most people think of cash or money when they do that. If there isn't, and if in the scenario we just used, if you brought me in and I may have even been paid, but I wasn't given any paperwork, or maybe I wasn't paid, I would technically have a right to claim a piece of that sound recording and any income coming from it, because I would be, by default, I would be a joint owner of that sound recording copyright. So there are some different avenues to go back and things like that. And the funny thing is, money changes everything. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, it's a creative process and people are vibing in the studio and everybody's having fun. And then like one of our earlier callers says, hey, look, the band's together. They're making some money and I'm on the outside looking in right now. What can be done?
Say it isn't so. Money changes everything?
I can't believe
someone told me that. Someone told me that one.
You know, my Philly lawyer got ripped off recently.
Oh.
Yeah, believe it or not. Somebody actually tried to mess with me. Some fool got www.myphillylawyers.com and then began to use it and directed people to that site, that URL, that I have branded over time and made famous in Philadelphia and far beyond. Mm-hmm. And so I had to send a cease and desist letter to this individual, not once, but twice, because the first attorney who foolishly attempted to use myphillylawyers.com backed off and said, oh, sorry, Dean, we didn't realize you were My Philly Lawyer. Ha, ha, ha. Mm-hmm. And then some new lawyer got it. And then I sent another cease and desist, and it's finally, I think it's over. But if you have an infamous URL, other URLs that can be confused with the original you can't do that. And My Philly Lawyer's trademark down in United States Trademark Office. And so we have an interest in that URL and any other URL that looks and sounds like that URL. But this fool actually tried to take our logo and created a similar logo. So when you went to the site, it looked like you were on my site. Mm. So even people like us, we get ripped off because, we've created something that has value. And that's what happens. Artists create something. Mm-hmm. When they create it, it has no value. But once I start liking it and everybody else starts liking it, then all of a sudden it has cash value. And now they're talking, well, how am I going to protect myself? Don't protect yourself after the fact. See Christopher before you're famous. That's the only way to do it. That's the best way to do it.
All right,
we got some callers.
There it is.
These lines are lit up.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. We welcome your calls at 215-263-1079. Wanda is calling in from Philadelphia. Wanda, good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning and thank you. I have a question. Mike's son wrote some songs, and a friend of his that was working with him send the songs to someone. Next thing we knew, we hear the music, songs on the radio, and they made millions. Mm-hmm. And we never knew what to do. We just thought, we'll scratch it up as a loss. But, it seemed like he should be able to get something.
Yeah, you don't have to to chalk that up as a loss, especially if it was relatively recently. But even if it wasn't, you don't necessarily have to do that. If your son wrote some songs and he was a songwriter on it and he has a piece of that copyright, he should be.
I don't know if he copyright wrote it or whatever. I think he maybe just wrote it and, you know, sang it and put the beat and stuff to it on the tape, and they send it to this guy or gave it to the guy. But
well, believe it or not, the Copyright Act changed in 1976. So was it after that?
We was living down south then, 76. It was after that, yes.
Okay, well then there probably are some different rights and some ways to remedy this. So why don't we talk sometime this week?
Okay, what's your number?
It's 215.
Mm-hmm.
575-3820.
3820. Okay, and I'm speaking to who?
Chris Cabot.
Chris, okay, he's home. I called him, so he's listening also.
Sounds good. I look forward to speaking with you.
All right, Wanda, thank you so much for your call,
and we
hope you have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right, we have David from West Philadelphia calling in. He's off the copyright topic, but a legal question nonetheless. David, good morning, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, Tiffany. Good morning, Dean and gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a question about my son. My son was given a warning. He had some type of citation was given to him, and he had, like, 72 hours or something to respond, or they was going to send a warrant out for him. And it was a citation that he said he was at work during the time, and they said that he was at a bar or something. But he said he has no knowledge of this incident, and he don't know what to do. But he did not respond within that time frame. And I told him, I said, well, go to your job and get proof that you was at work. But he didn't. So what should he do? Because I'm quite sure they have a warrant out for him now.
How old is your son?
25.
Okay. What he should do is what I'd say is he should call to find out if there's a warrant, because at this point you don't have enough information. It doesn't even sound like you know for certain whether there's a warrant. But if there is a warrant for his arrest, then he needs to contact counsel to deal with that, and he can call us at the office tomorrow and ask for the attorney at our office who specializes in criminal defense, who's Ken Edelin.
Ken Edelin?
Edelin, E-A-D-E-L-I-N. E-D-E-L-I-N. Yeah, Kenny's out there listening right now saying, I told thee. E D E L I.
You pronounced it right, but now you can't spell it.
Right.
E D
E L I N. Kenny Edelin, and call our office tomorrow, and Ken will take care of it. He's a wonderful attorney.
What's number one more time?
You're going to have to listen to the rest of the show because I'll
be giving you that in just one second.
I think that's the number. My Philly lawyer.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, I got that.
All right.
Thank you.
God bless. Have a great day.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, David. If you're just tuning in, this is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. Now, maybe you're sitting back and you're wondering what to do if you or someone are involved in an automobile accident, a slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice. Just call the law offices of Silvers, Langsman, Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer with over 100 years of combined experience. They will aggressively fight for you. Call now for your free personal consultation. Remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. For your answers to those questions and more, call 215-227-2727, 215-227-2727, or visit them online at myphillylawyer.com. You can give us a call in studio if you need some immediate assistance, and also if you have any questions about copyright law with our special guest this morning.
Okey-dokey.
I have a question.
David, you know you're
going to... Yeah, you know whose question it is, too.
It's Dave's question.
It's Dave's question. I'm going to shout out to Dave since his name is shared with me. And Chris, real quick, because I think Dave's question is an important one. You identified how he can go about getting his, I guess for lack of a better word, royalties. But this band, let's assume the band's going out and playing clubs and stuff, and they're getting cash, you know, and they might be doing it a lot, actually. Does he have a right to a part of that money, number one? And if he does, how does he go about getting it?
In terms of the actual songwriting, when I talked about earlier,
yeah.
and I asked him about if he was registered with ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC, it sounds like he is, so I think that we're going to be able to help him there.
Sure.
When a band breaks up, and some guys continue on with the name, or some guys continue on without the name, or a new group spins off, or whatever, when they tour, when they do club dates and things like that, sure, when they're actually getting performances and they're getting paid to perform, if you're part of the group performing that night, usually those are the only folks who are entitled to get paid for that. It's a different income stream,
right,
a little bit of a separate income stream. It's just more or less getting paid for a service.
I got you.
Think of it like that.
So he probably is not entitled to that.
He's probably not going to see some of the touring money and things like that. But you know, that segues into, if I could, just on a quick point, I want to make a couple quick explanations here, just to really broaden some people's eyes to some things. This is how money. I'm going to tell you how money's made in the music industry. We talked about a song where Dean wrote it, Tiffany recorded it. When any time there's a unit, a download, a CD sold of Dean's song, he's going to get what's called a mechanical royalty. That's 9.1 cents. That comes from the Copyright Act. I couldn't make that up, especially on a Sunday morning. The second, anytime there's public performance, radio, TV, etc., he gets paid based on the volume of that. ASCAP, BMI, CSAC collected. Anytime that music is featured in a film, an audiovisual work, a video game, the actual production of a commercial, a television show, he gets a flat fee. It's called a sync license. It's a license to use his music. It's non-exclusive, or it should be, especially if I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. Then there are two other smaller income streams. On Tiffany's side, on her recording, she makes money three ways. One, she sells it for whatever the market will bear. The second is anytime that there's actually public performance play on internet radio, satellite radio, and then music choice at the end of your cable dial, there's a company called Sound Exchange that collects that, because there's no actual public performance right for terrestrial radio, etc. We talked about that earlier, but there is on some of those internet, satellite, and music choice channels there. And then last, just the same way that a filmmaker would have to pay a sync license to clear Dean's use of his song in a film, you also have to pay Tiffany to clear the use of what they call the master recording, the master use.
Okay.
So I named three. Here's the thing. I named three income streams for the recording. Mm-hmm. I identified three for the song, but I said there are some more. Mm-hmm. And there's really five primary. Five always beats three. Mm-hmm. And in our current climate, where you have internet downloads, even legally sold for 99 cents, and you give 30 cents off the top to Apple, that doesn't do what $19 CDs did in terms of income and revenue. And that's why you'll hear Professor Remick is famous for saying this, that publishing and the ownership in the song, that's the real estate of the music industry. It's the real estate. When you think about this, a recording's hot for 2 years, people buy it, and it's somewhat of a shelf life. If you wrote a song, and I wrote an article in Foundation magazine about this, even if it's not the hot song anymore, but it's on the best of the 2000s in a couple of years, and then oldies, and you get $15,000 a year from ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC. That's $15,000 a year for the rest of your life, and then 70 years after you pass.
Wow. Wow. All right, good stuff. Also, there's another couple of questions over here on the side of the bench, so to speak. What about people who do use the songs without permission? What if they jack a beat? What if they, you know?
Jacking a beat, that's a legal term. I like
beat.
That. That's
yeah.
No, I like that. I like that. It happens. It happens a lot more than you would think. And without getting into a whole long lecture about sampling and things like that, people may have heard of samples. What it is, more or less, sometimes you'll hear a song, especially in a lot of pop or hip-hop or even some R&B music, where, in fact, there are writers that we represent their management company on Flo Rida's new single called Sugar. And in the beginning, there's a sample. It's very recognizable. Mm-hmm. What happens is, if you want to use, let's say 10 years down the road, someone says, you know what, I love that Sunday Morning with Tiffany song, I want to use a piece of it, take 7 seconds of it, loop it throughout the song, I want to do that, they're going to have to clear the song, the actual song rights through Dean. They're going to have to clear the recording rights through Tiffany. And when you hear about people doing that without doing that, I mean, there's severe penalties, severe penalties on that. The seminal case, not to get too long-winded with it, but the seminal case about that was with Biz Markie. And Biz Markie sampled a monk. You know, a monk is someone who takes a vow of poverty. Cash doesn't really formulate with them. And he said, look, this is, I've created something. I've created some music. It's my own artistic creation. Mm-hmm. I don't want you using it. It's not a monetary matter. It's just that I don't want other people using it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, that sampling itself is a very complicated matter. And we've done a lot of work with it. And it can really work out well if it's handled right. When you talk about jacking a beat, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you can actually prove, if you can improve that, that someone had access to the song and that they used it, they copied it, and that they, there wasn't any rights given out, there weren't any licenses, there weren't any clearances, no permission, you've got a classic copyright infringement matter. And I want to hear about those. I want to hear about those. Another thing I want to hear about are older songwriters who went into publishing deals or gave away their music. We now have a new law out there that allows us to go back and give them a second bite at the apple.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone out there who entered into publishing deals years and years and years ago, and a song became famous and you're not seeing any royalties on it, I want to know about it.
All right.
Very good. You're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB.
We have... The lines couldn't be lit any more than they are. We need to take some calls, Tiffany.
All right. And again, if you would like to squeeze in a couple more questions in the last few minutes of the program, feel free to do so. 215-263-1079. We have Mary calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning, Mary, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Mary.
I have a comment and a question.
Yes.
My comment is, I'm surprised I haven't heard about the poor man's copyright. And my question is, how does one go about securing orphaned music?
Okay. Well, let's tackle the first question first, because I think we need to, let's say, debunk a myth.
All right. Exactly. The sad thing about the poor man's copyright is that it left the man poor. And here's why. The poor man's copyright is an urban legend. It is a myth. What it actually does, when you put something in the mail and you mail it to yourself, it'll establish a date of creation, which is helpful, you know, which is obviously absolutely helpful, especially like with Tiffany was talking about. You say if someone jacks a beat or something like that, if you can prove, hey, you know, I created this first, I own this, someone else did something similar, just it's just coincidental, that's helpful. But that in and of itself, just sending something to your mail, that doesn't give you a right to enforce it. The interesting thing is, like I said earlier, when the moment that Dean wrote that song and put it in the paper, he owns a copyright in it per the Copyright Act. He can't enforce it until he registers it with the Library of Congress at copyright.gov. And that's the same thing with Tiffany on the sound recording side.
You see, if you follow the rule of law and create a bona fide copyright, or as I did with my trademark, a bona fide trademark at the trademark office, then you have access to the full panoply of laws and protections that one gets when they follow these rules, and you can avail yourself of them in federal court and start spanking people. If you do what you call the poor man's copyright, you have none of those rights. What you have is a right of common law ownership. You can get in and maybe, you know, try to prove it and fight, and it's just not the same protection that you have when you've officially copyrighted it. And according to Chris, it doesn't sound like it's all that difficult to copyright it. You can probably do it on your own at
www.copyright.gov.
Yes, you can, long as you have a mechanical copy.
It's inexpensive.
You don't necessarily need a mechanical copy. You can actually upload a digital copy.
That's true.
And for songwriters, you can even send in...
the Copyright Office actually stipulates that you should provide some type of the best available mechanical copy or digital copy that you have access to.
Writers can actually send in sheet music or anything that you've written. I've even done that for people in the past. You can get it done. It's very, very simple.
Okay, and then how about the question about the orphan music?
Unfortunately, listen, our producer, Chris, he's imploring me to answer the question.
One was a comment, one was a question.
Okay. Red Chris has brought out a technicality. Okay, all right, well, let's get to this question. Go ahead, give it to us.
Okay, the question was, how does one go about securing orphan music?
Okay, and
what is orphaned music?
Orphaned music.
Orphaned.
Orphaned
music is music that, let's say, I wrote it, and I decide I don't basically do anything with it, and it just lays idle.
Okay, and it's not never been copyrighted?
Yes, it has been copyrighted, but it gets orphaned at a period of time. And if you go onto the Copyright Office website, there is a section for orphaned music that people can secure.
I'm sorry, what are you looking to do with this orphaned music?
Well, let's say music that has been orphaned, and I decide, okay, I want to capitalize on it, and I'm going to license as much music as possible. Okay,
I think what you may be referencing is music that's in the public domain, that after a while the copyright expires. Under the old act, under the 1909 act, the year I was born, I'm teasing. You owned it for 28 years, and then if you didn't renew in a certain time, you lost the copyright, went to the public domain, or you could renew and have it for another 28 years. For public domain works, you are correct. You actually have the right to go in and use that music and use it for what you would like. You see that a lot in books. You'll go into a bookstore and see seven different versions of a public domain work that's going to the public domain.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You all do the same.
Stay
blessed. Thank you much.
You're welcome.
This is Court Radio on 107.9 FM, WRNB. We have a call in from South Philadelphia. Rick is on the phone. Good morning, Rick, and welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, good morning.
Yes, good morning. What is your question, sir?
My question is this. I worked for a nursing home for like 7 years. My wife did. And then in the 8th year, another company took over, and she went back to inquire about the pension plan. They told her that they had no record of her working there.
Okay. Well, what is it that she's trying to do again? I missed the first part.
She's trying to collect on the pension, right? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Well, does she have any legal rights to that pension plan?
Well, the answer to that question is a factually specific answer, and it would require proof that she was an employee, and that the employment contract or benefits package included that pension plan. So, if, for instance, my employees are entitled to a 401k plan if they're with me for more than 1 year. So if they've done that, then they've met their obligation, and we contribute if they contribute. And so if they don't contribute, we don't contribute. And if they've never contributed, then they get nothing. So it's very factual specific, but it's certainly something that you should look into, because people's rights are often lost because they fail to enforce them. And so gather up your information and
she has all the documentation.
She has the documentation?
She has all the documentation that she worked there for 7 years.
Okay. And then the documentation you have, whatever that is, you need to gather it up and contact an attorney who can then contact the company on your behalf to inquire as to her rights to the pension. As you know, you'll listen to the show. You can always call us tomorrow, and we'll be happy to help you or get you somebody who can.
Thanks. Give me a number again, V.
That number will be given by Tiffany once more before we end the show. Just listen in for a few more minutes. We got to move on to the next question. Have a great day. Thank you.
Have a great day, too. Thanks for the information.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you. Thanks again. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. We have time for maybe one or two more last calls. If you want to sneak a few in, 215-263-1079. So back to copyrights. Say, we've talked about music, but what about people who have, say, visual arts? How do you copyright a painting, and how could one infringe on something like that?
There are a lot of ways. There are a lot of ways, Tiffany. It's a great question. The same way that you secure a copyright to music, to a song, to a recording, there's also visual art, paintings, graphic designs, things like that. The design of it is copyrightable. And where a lot of times you'll see copyright with graphic art or designs or something like that, or even paintings, is you'll see people selling lithographs or copies of the or prints of the original painting or something like that without permission. And if the copyright is still alive, it hasn't gone to the public domain, you know, that is a right that the original copyright owner has. Same thing applies to photography, believe it or not.
Okay. Dean, you were going to ask something.
Was I going to ask something?
I thought you were.
I'm not sure. But I just want to say before we end up the show that Christopher is currently an adjunct professor in entertainment law at York College and Temple University. You're doing an awful lot for a young guy. You know, you're energetic. You're involved in this industry and on an amazing level already. And you must love it.
I appreciate that. I really do. I just want to clarify to at Temple, I teach sports and law in the undergrad there. But no, I very am. I'm very blessed. The fact is, at an early age, I had a vision of what I wanted to do with my life. And I took the steps to undo it. And the Lord inspired me to follow a path. And I had the pleasure of meeting Professor Lloyd Remick 6 years ago. Had the opportunity to work with him, learn with him, and continue to take that experience and go out and help a lot of people. I just really believe in this world. It's about people. It's about learning from people, teaching people, being taught by people, speaking with people. If it's not, I don't think it makes sense in terms of God's vision. And it's a blessing to wake up every morning and really do what you love and be passionate about it. So I'm thrilled. I'm
Eric?
Really thrilled.
Awesome. Excellent. Excellent.
That's great. That's great. That's really great.
We still have
that's a note to end on, really. But
yeah. Well, we have
a great. We still have a few more minutes.
You can't be any more positive than that. That was wonderful.
That's awesome.
So we have some more callers on the line, and Chris is going to turn us on to one of them.
All right. Here's Irene.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Irene.
Hi. How are you guys?
Doing well, ma'am. And what's your question?
My question is, I need to know the steps to go about getting something expunged from your record. I was in a fight when I was 13 years old in high school and recently passed the test to become a police officer and a correction officer. And at the last steps, I was told I couldn't continue. Nobody gave me, they said it was because at 13 I was arrested. And I said, yeah, but I put that on the application and it just, you know, it was like, okay, well, you just can't go any further. At that point, I felt as though, you know, I thought everything was expunged. Even though I put it on the application that it still happened to me, I was 13. I was a minor. And no one has gotten back to me. I went down to City Hall. I mean, I've been running all around trying to get this expunged.
All right. Nothing. Here's the answer, Irene. Here's the answer, dear. A petition for expungement would be what's in order in this case. We actually have currently pending two petitions for expungement in my office. So you're more than welcome to give us a call tomorrow. We can bring you in for an appointment. Usually my Philly lawyer works on a contingent fee. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, what a contingent fee is and why it's important. There's occasionally those matters which are not subject to a contingent fee, they're charged on an hourly basis. An expungement petition would be such an event. And so I would say to you that you need to have an attorney involved to get this matter expunged, to have all of the evidence of that juvenile involvement with the law removed from your record so that you would not even have to talk about it any longer. It would be as if it didn't happen. It's over, gone, kaput.
The only caveat I would put on that, and I don't know this to be true, she said that she was doing an application to the police, and they may have a different standard. Even though your records are expunged, the police have access to certain records, and if you had some criminal activity, and I don't know this to be the case, but they may have some rules as to certain type of criminal activity in the past might be something that they look at anyway and say that, you know, it disqualifies you. I don't know that.
That may be, and that's a
it was a simple fight at 13.
I understand. I'm just saying, just as a caveat to be wary of that, but and certainly consult with.
David only said that because we have to say a little Latin every Sunday.
Caveat, yes.
Okay.
I like the word caveat.
But
it protects me.
But in any event, give us a call. The expungement can happen in your case, I'm fairly certain. But the question is whether that's going to be sufficient for the police department, and that's really an internal question for the police. You may want to ask before you spend the money and time to get an expungement. Nonetheless, If an expungement is what's in order and it's what you want, you can. That's something we do, and please give us a call. And have a great Sunday.
All right, Irene. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
We also have Marie. Real quick, Marie.
Good morning. I'm calling about my son. He has a case over up in the Poconos, and I wanted to see if I could get it transferred to Philadelphia.
What kind of case?
He has a drug case. He's 18 years old, and he's having, I'm having a hard time getting back and forth from Philly to the Poconos. I had someone driving me up there a while ago, but now I don't have no one to take me now, and I just wanted to see if I could get someone to transfer. Or how can I?
Is the case over? Has he been found guilty in the Poconos?
Actually, his case is not over. He's supposed to go to sentencing April 16th.
Okay, well then, at this point, nobody's going to transfer that case down to Philadelphia because the alleged crime occurred in the Poconos. They've found him guilty, and they're just. It's pending sentencing. Once he's sentenced, if he's got a probationary sentence of some sort, it's possible to have that transferred to Philly so that he can be monitored down in Philadelphia if he's got a residence down here with you.
Okay.
But they're going to complete the sentencing up in the Poconos.
Oh, okay.
Have a blessed Sunday. Thanks for calling us and keep listening.
I will. Thanks.
We have Gwen calling in. Good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How's everyone feeling?
All right, Gwen.
Gwen, I'm just going to caution you one thing. We're running out of time, so let's.
Okay. I'm calling because I got married October 1st of 2006, and I was separated by December 1st of 2006. And this man, you know, it really took away from my mental and my emotions. And I'm trying to figure out what can I do. It's like. He act like I don't exist, and it took me. I'm going through a lot of mental and emotional problems right now, and I love the Lord Jesus Christ, and I remember my vows that I said.
I'm sorry, Gwen. I know you're in the middle of
okay,
explaining
well,
this to us.
I just want to know what can I do.
Okay, what you can do is, I suppose, move on. In your personal life, because from a legal perspective, if the marriage is at an end, the marriage is at an end. And what you need to do is bring that marriage to a conclusion, both emotionally, spiritually, and legally. I will say that I wish you the best and to have a great Sunday. The rest of our listeners, we will be back next week.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you to our guest for coming in. Thank you for getting
My
up
pleasure.
So early.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Christopher.
Not a problem. Much love to you, Dean and David, and of course to our producer, Red Chris, for always doing a wonderful job. Today's program is brought to you by the law offices of Silver Slangsman Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. I'm Tiffany Bacon saying don't turn that dial because Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is up next. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive day. Bye-bye.
To download Court Radio Podcast, log on to 107.9 WRNB.com.